Football Weekly is on the air.
Breeze in the shotgun, looks to his right, throws into the flat, Bush diving for the pylon, he's in! Reggie Bush with his patented fleur-de-lis into the end zone for a 6-yard touchdown strike.
Second and 10 at the Raiders 17. Jason back to pass, scrambles into the end zone. Fred Davis, touchdown! Second touchdown of the game for Fred Davis.
Jackson is wide left this time, Floyd to the right. Play action. Rivers looking end zone, got Gates. Touchdown! San Diego! As he steps around Sensabaugh into the end zone. Chargers on top in Dallas.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up as we go down the stretch, big games in Week 15, Giants and Skins, Bengals and Chargers.
What's the latest on the head coaching fronts in Jacksonville and Washington, and is Jamarcus Russell truly done in Oakland?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. Week 15, as we head down the stretch of the regular season, and we welcome in senior editor Mike Wilkening. Mike, tragic news this week. The death of Chris Henry, the wide receiver of the Cincinnati Bengals, who was on the injured list with a broken arm, but went back home to Charlotte. And tell us what happened to him.
Tragically, Wayne and Hub, Chris Henry died in an accident, a domestic incident, as the Charlotte police called it. Apparently, some sort of argument between Chris Henry and his fiancée. Police have said Chris Henry jumped into the back of a pickup truck that his fiancée was driving, and at some point, police have said he came out of the back of the truck in some form or fashion and was injured and died of those injuries. So, yes, a tremendous tragedy.
Well, yeah, terribly tragic any time a young man in his mid-late 20s loses his life, and somehow it strikes at us deeper when it's a gifted young man who clearly had been troubled in the past, seemed to have turned his life around. And, you know, Wilkie, this is one of those stories that while we have to report it, I don't think we want to make it any more than the tragedy that it is. There is no indication from what I've heard that this is an extension of any of the earlier troubles in his career, and it's just a horrible, horrible accident, and I've got to believe that this Bengals ball club, as they get ready to make a trip to the West Coast, is completely stunned.
Right, and they are. You know, certainly Chad Ochocinco is kind of the public face of this team, the most vocal player, taking it very hard, very broken up about it. This is a team that, from all accounts, that kind of grew to see, as Marvin Lewis put it, Henry's a guy that really, you know, over time began to sort of mature. And from all accounts, of somebody that was trying to do the right things in his life, and a tremendous tragedy is something that certainly has had quite a devastating effect on that locker room.
Yeah, absolutely. And our prayers to the family of Chris Henry. Cleveland, Mike Holmgren stepped in. Apparently, he is interviewed with the Browns for their head of football operations. What's the status there from what you know, Mike?
Well, he's reportedly been offered the job. From that standpoint, as of this taping, we're not quite sure what's going to happen. But what we do know is this. He looks like he's at the top of their list of candidates, to sort of head up their football operations, to run the football side of things. And this is something Randy Lerner has been looking for ever since the team got off to a very poor start. It was a particularly bad loss at Chicago, and thereafter kind of a lot of changes. Lerner started to suggest that a lot of changes might be coming. So the natural question is this. If Holmgren is hired, certainly it would look like he'd have the bulk of the power there. What would happen, Eric Mangini? We just don't know. But we do know is this. Eric Mangini seems to continue to have a good hold over this team. They've played hard for him. But if someone comes in that would have final say on a head coach and things like that, it really remains to be seen whether or not he would be able to do anything to be able to keep his job.
And interesting and worth pointing out is that while a Browns spokesman, Bill Bonsa, was reported on Thursday, certainly acknowledged that the club is in serious conversation. He said specifically that compensation has not been discussed. And so with money not yet on the table, obviously nothing would appear to be imminent in terms of Holmgren's decision.
Right, and I think that was probably what was trying to be stressed there. But a lot of moving parts here, and I think what it basically underscores is this, Randy Lerner, from all accounts, is serious about this idea of revamping the football operations. Holmgren looks like the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, to sort of be their top guy to take over that role. Whether that happens or not, we just don't know at this point.
Yeah, revamping that organization once again, I guess we should add. Mike, thank you very much. Senior Editor Mike Wilkening, Associate Editor Arthur Arkush joins us. Arthur, down in Jacksonville, as they headed into the Thursday night game against the Colts, there was a lot of talk that Jacksonville Jaguars head coach Jack Del Rio would be retained if the team makes the playoffs, may not be retained if they don't. What can you tell us about that story?
Well, that is certainly the case. Following their Week 14 loss to the Dolphins, there were a lot of question marks as to just how that game went and some of the decisions that were made. Not even so much decisions as just kind of inexcusable mistakes that occurred during that game. Del Rio's kind of not had an up and down year. He's actually done pretty well with the talent that he has, but there's just been some questionable outcomes during the games, and there was some bad penalties. Jacksonville's actually the least penalized team in the NFL, and there were just a couple mistakes in that game against Miami that were very, very costly. They had too many men on the field. They had a delay of game after their biggest gain on the entire afternoon. And then late in the fourth quarter, they actually only had 10 men on the field on a crucial fourth down attempt as they were trying to mount a comeback. And it's just the kind of things that can't happen. It was completely inexcusable. Del Rio is still owed $15 million. He signed through 2012, so that certainly adds another element. As we know, Jacksonville, they have some financial constraints, but on the other side of it, Gene Smith, their new general manager, may want to bring in his own guy, and there certainly is a lot riding on these final three games.
Arthur, thank you very much. We talk to you again next week. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It items when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Associate Editor Dan Parr joins us. Dan, I know there's a story like this in every camp. I mean, teams have free agents. They don't know if they're going to be restricted free agents or unrestricted free agents because of the tenuous situation involving the collective bargaining agreement. But at any rate, let's take a look at the Denver Broncos, one of your teams. Quarterback Kyle Orton, Elvis Dumervil, the defensive end, Brandon Marshall, the all-pro wide receiver. My goodness, the three cornerstones of that franchise could be restricted or unrestricted free agents, right?
That's right, Wayne. And the sources we've talked to seem to think that Elvis Dumervil and Brandon Marshall are going to be priority number one and two, not necessarily in that order, but these will be the top two priorities for this team going into the offseason to get them locked up regardless of whether they're restricted or unrestricted. Those are going to be the top two priorities. Kyle Orton's going to be third. Now he's had a great year, career year. He's going to set career marks in several offensive categories, and this team is headed probably for a wild card spot in the playoffs. But I'm not sure the market is going to really be there for Kyle Orton. I'm not sure a lot of teams are going to be crying out to get a bid in on him. And if he's restricted, there's a good chance the Broncos are going to have Orton back for a pretty moderate price for a starting quarterback that just led a team to the playoffs.
Well, and Dan, we need to report to our listeners, yes, a lot of things can happen between March 1 and today, but we see the way the wind is blowing, or I should say feel the way the wind is blowing and hear it, and the reality is there just isn't going to be a new CBA by March 1st, and so it's safe to assume that Orton and Dumervil and Marshall will all be restricted. And just so our listeners understand, there's also going to be an extra tag available, one franchise tag, one transition tag. But even without those tags, with a restricted free agent, if you tender him an offer, it triggers draft compensation that teams just aren't going to be willing to pay for Kyle Orton.
That's right. There's Kyle Orton and probably some of those other guys, too. I'm not sure if a team's willing to give up. We saw last offseason, team wasn't willing to give up a first-round pick. Multiple picks for Brandon Marshall. Are they going to be willing to do that now? It's not clear. Dumervil, another guy some teams would want, but are they willing to pay the price? It's probably not going to be a lot of teams coming in with poisonous offer sheets for these restricted guys.
Dan, another one of your teams, the Oakland Raiders. Quarterback Bruce Gradkowski out for this week, at least maybe longer with a knee injury. Are they going to go back to Jamarcus Russell, or will journeyman Charlie Fry get the call this week?
Wayne, as Tom Cable announced, it's going to be Charlie Fry, which is casts more doubt on Jamarcus Russell's future than ever before. Now, it was a little bit of a surprise when the change to Gradkowski happened, but this is clearly a more definitive statement on how they feel about Russell when you turn things over to Charlie Fry, the third stringer, guy who hasn't started a game in a couple years. Tom Cable seems to really be looking to guys who are going to make the commitment, who are going to practice hard and come to practice early, be dedicated, and he's not seeing that from Jamarcus right now.
Well, but here's the interesting thing about this, Dan, that we have to try and wade through. We don't know that Tom Cable's going to be back next year. And the reason Jamarcus Russell was benched was he clearly is not ready to play right now. The flip side of that, though, is with $42 million guaranteed dollars in this kid at the end of his third year, he's still the physical prospect that he was when they drafted him. He has just proven to be kind of lazy and not have great work habits and not learn all that well. But I got to believe before you walk away from a $42 million investment, maybe you get him a different coach and see what he can do. As far as this start, they just benched him a couple weeks ago because he wasn't ready to play. He's probably not going to learn that much more by getting thrown back to the Wolves the last couple weeks of the season.
It's too early to say that this is the end of Jamarcus Russell's career with the Raiders. I don't think anyone's ready to jump to the conclusion that he will be gone at the end of the year. But what it does do is tell you that Cable's not his guy. We thought that Cable was going to be committed to developing Russell to make him a better guy. He brought in some coaches that he thought would be able to do that for him, but it just hasn't worked out. Paul Hackett being one of them, a guy who's really worked with a lot of good quarterbacks in his career, and while these guys have pretty much made the commitment to Russell, they didn't see it in return from him, and until that changes, and there's not going to be a lot of love between Cable and Russell, it looks like.
Yeah, it sounds to me, though, it may be a case not of coaching but of the player, and that may be the problem there, and that's a huge problem for the Raiders with all that money invested in the former number one draft choice. Dan, thank you very much. Let's bring in senior editor Eric Edholm. Eric Washington, they make a move. Vinny Serrato is out, and Bruce Allen is in, and one has to wonder, is John Gruden soon to follow?
Yeah, that's certainly the first name you would associate with Bruce Allen. Of course, you know, they came up together as head coach and senior staff member in Oakland, and then he followed Gruden to Tampa Bay a year after Gruden got there. Had a couple strong years there. Both ultimately were let go after last season. But we hear Mike Shanahan also has to be in the discussion. You know, I mean, Gruden obviously is the name you associate with Allen, but Shanahan reportedly is still on that list. You know, Bruce Allen's very familiar with Shanahan from their AFC West days, spent nine years facing off against each other. So I certainly wouldn't rule out Shanahan in the next coaching search if Jim Zorn indeed is not going to be back.
Eric, I got to ask very quickly, though. I wonder at times if Daniel Snyder doesn't appear to be aspire to be a comedy writer in another life and writing his own punchlines right now, because if there is a, quote, NFL GM out there with less personnel, talent, and experience than Vinny Serrato, it may be Bruce Allen. Now, I understand the Allen family's connection to the Washington area, but this is a guy who never had control of the picks under Al Davis in Oakland and never had control of the picks under John Gruden in Tampa, and most of those picks weren't very good. And yeah. So how does Snyder figure this is the answer?
Yeah, they had a lot of picks in Tampa, and although they developed a lot of starters, you know, as you know, Hub, we did a recent study of the draft accountability from 2004 to 2008, which is exactly when those guys were paired up in Tampa. Although they drafted a lot of starters, a lot of them were kind of mid-level or below-level starters. These guys weren't Pro Bowlers. You know, they weren't finding Derek Brooks out there. They weren't finding Simeon Rice and other Buck stars that they were unable to replace on defense. So you got to question their draft record there and wonder whether it's not going to just be another free agent free-for-all like they've been doing in Washington for a while now.
Senior editor Eric Edholm, thank you very much, Eric. Stay tuned. The games of Week 15 are up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, the Colts and Jaguars played Thursday night, and as usual, we concentrate on the weekend action in the NFL. The Arizona Cardinals are coming off a bad Monday night loss at San Francisco, but this week, the NFC Western Division leaders are in Detroit, where the Lions are just 2-11. Now, the Lions lost running back Kevin Smith to a knee injury last week against the Ravens. Also, check the status of quarterback Matthew Stafford, who sat out the Ravens game due to a left non-throwing shoulder injury. So, an offense that has been much less than explosive this season probably just got a little less potent this week. The Cardinals had 6 turnovers in their loss to San Francisco Monday night, but prior to that, they had been flying high, especially on the road where they'd won 5 of 6 in 2 victories against the NFC North competition, Chicago and Minnesota. Arizona has put 836 yards of offense on the board, including 295 yards on the ground. Look for more of the same against the Lions. The Houston Texans at 6-7 are, believe it or not, still somewhat alive in the AFC wildcard picture, and they look to extend their postseason hope another week as they travel to St. Louis to face a Rams squad that is just 1-12. But really, what the Texans are looking for is their first winning season in franchise history. If they run the table from here on out, they will, well, they'll have 9 wins. Playoffs or not, that's progress, isn't it? Check the status of quarterback Kyle Bowler for the Cardinals. He went down with a thigh injury last week. Rookie Ken Null replaced him. Best matchup to watch in this game, Steven Jackson, the Rams' outstanding rusher against a very good Texans linebacking core led by D'Amico Ryans and rookie Brian Cushing, who combined for 22 tackles, 6 for losses, and a sack last week in the demolition of Seattle. Hub?
Wayne, the Chicago Bears go to Baltimore to take on the Ravens this week, and they got to be a little nervous after the licking the Ravens put on the Detroit Lions with a 500-plus yard explosion at home last week as they try and battle down the stretch to get to 9-7 and claim one of those AFC wildcard spots. The Chicago Bears just honestly aren't playing very good football right now, and while they don't appear to have quit on head coach Lovie Smith, they're playing dumb, the penalties are piling up, and there's really nobody on the Bears side of the ball that you can look to make a play or to do the things you need to get into a game where you go in last in the league running the football against a Baltimore defense 6 stopping the run. The Bears just 22nd in points scored, Baltimore 4th in points allowed. This one appears to be a bit of a mismatch in favor of the homestanding Baltimore Ravens. Now, flip it around. You got the New England Patriots going into Buffalo. The Patriots, of course, the class of the AFC East, even though they've struggled a little bit. The Buffalo Bills bringing up the rear, but the Bills have been competitive the last couple weeks while the Patriots have struggled. They actually had to stop a 2-game losing streak just last week, something they hadn't done since 2006, and they did it, you know, okay, but not overly impressively against the Carolina Panthers. Here's the one factor you've got to look at in this football game. The New England Patriots are 7-0 at home this year, but they're just 1-5 on the road, and that was a game in London where they beat the lowly Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who were also on the road. Buffalo, not overly impressive, but can New England go on the road and beat anybody? Well, we're going to find out when they visit the Bills this weekend, Wayne.
All right, Hub, the Cleveland Browns coming off their biggest win of the season, a throttling of the world champion Steelers, are in Kansas City to face the 3-10 Chiefs. Now, the Browns were inspired against their arch rivals a week ago Thursday night. They rushed for, and I can't believe this, they rushed for 171 yards against the Steeler defense, and Chris Jennings' 10-yard TD run was the Browns' first rushing touchdown of the season, believe it or not. Defensively, they held the Steelers out of the end zone. Meanwhile, the Chiefs are struggling offensively through the air, but making some strides on the ground as Jamaal Charles ran for 143 yards in a loss to the Bills last week. Now, that's the matchup to watch. The Browns are playing without their all-pro nose tackle, Sean Rogers, who's out for the season due to injury. Taba Rubin gets the call up front at the nose of that Cleveland defense, and yes, the Chiefs will challenge Cleveland on the ground. Two teams very much alive in the playoff picture in their respective conferences collide in the Meadowlands. The Atlanta Falcons at 6-7 from the NFC visit the AFC's 7-6 New York Jets. Now, these two seem to be going in opposite directions. The Falcons have lost 4 of their last 5, and the Jets have won 3 in a row. The Jets have broken even in 6 home games this season, but the Falcons come in just 1-5 on the road. The Jets are number 1 of the league in rushing the football behind Thomas Jones. Look for them to stick to that formula against an Atlanta defense that has been porous at best on the ground.
Wayne, look up the word mismatch in Webster's, and what you may very well find is the Oakland Raiders, 31st in the league in offense, the Denver Broncos 3rd in total defense, the Raiders 31st in points scored, the Broncos 5th in points allowed. Broncos are 8th in the league in turnover takeaway ratio. Oakland is 27th. Denver has won 10 of the last 13 against Oakland, and for the cherry on top of that Sunday, the Raiders allowed 8 sacks last week to the Washington Redskins, and this week they get NFL sack leader Elvis Dumervil. This one does not look real pretty with the Denver Broncos awaiting the arrival of the Oakland Raiders.
You know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are one of two teams sitting at 1-12, and they head to the Great Northwest where the Seattle Seahawks are coming off a dreadful performance at Houston. Tampa has lost 16 of his last 17 games, including 0-6 on the road this season. The Seahawks are 4-2 at home. Josh Freeman, the rookie quarterback for the Buccaneers, continues to go through growing pains. As a result, the Buccaneer offense has produced just 33 points in its last 4 games. There is little on the line here other than draft positioning in a game that features two teams that entered the NFL together as expansion clubs in 1977. Big games are up next on Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkush. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. Well, the Minnesota Vikings travel to Carolina, where the Panthers are 5-8 and basically done in the playoff race. But the Vikings, Hub, on the other hand, are on the verge of clinching their second straight NFC North Division title, and they can do it with a victory. Vikings second in the league in points scored, sixth overall in yardage gained on offense. They are number 9 in defense in terms of points allowed and sixth in yardage allowed. Another outstanding season for the Northlanders.
Yeah, not a lot of mystery left for the Vikings, Wayne. They had their worst game of the season 2 weeks ago on Sunday night at Arizona and then bounced right back at home last Sunday against a very good Cincinnati Bengals team and pounded them pretty good. I guess you could make the argument that Arizona was on the road. Now they go back out on the road. I don't see the Panthers offering a ton of resistance, but this is the game where the Vikings make their statement. If they can go in and win this one, hopefully win big, they're pretty much locked into the number 2 seed, and then they can take a step back and start to get ready for the playoffs.
You know, Hub, we realize our show airs on Sundays in many markets, but there are a lot of you who listen to this program prior to Sundays, and we wanted to make sure we were able to preview one of the top games this season. On Saturday night, the Dallas Cowboys travel to New Orleans where the undefeated Saints await. Gus Kattengill has the story.
The Saints look to remain unbeaten as they host the Cowboys Saturday night in the Superdome in what undoubtedly will be a juiced-up atmosphere. For the Saints, it's simple. They're chasing history in an undefeated season. More immediately, home field advantage throughout the playoffs. 13 wins still isn't enough to accomplish that yet. For the 8-5 Cowboys, they're a game back of Philadelphia in the NFC East and must win to keep hopes of postseason play alive. Basically, what I'm saying is all of the right ingredients for a great plate of football in the Big Easy are there for Saturday night. Saints quarterback Drew Brees.
We've looked at that game on the schedule for a long time and just been looking forward to it, and we're hoping that we'd be in the position that we are now going into it, which is 13-0. They're fighting for a playoff spot and still kind of fighting for a division championship themselves, so they have a lot to play for. We have a lot to play for. It should be a great game.
Dallas quarterback Tony Romo has heard all week about the slim odds the Cowboys have at winning Saturday night. Romo doesn't care.
They're a very, very, very good football team, obviously, but they're even better at home. And that really goes without saying for a lot of teams, but this team really raises their level at home. If you look at their point production at home and what they give up, it's you know, I think they're averaging almost a 14-point victory at home. I still think our defense is going to play one heck of a game this weekend. Obviously, they have a great challenge ahead of them, but you have to believe in them to get stops. If I'm thinking in the back of my mind that the Saints are going to score 7 points every time they touch the ball, you know, you're probably not going to play your best game.
As for Brees, he's hoping the Houdat Nation brings their A game.
We like to think that it just gets a little bit louder every time.
Romo expects the Cowboys to bring theirs.
But I promise you, our team, we have blinders on as far as going out there, committed to our approach this week, working hard, and coming out with a game plan that we feel will give us a great opportunity to play our best game. And as good as they are, we feel as though if we play really well, we have a great chance to be there.
In New Orleans, for Pro Football Weekly, I'm Gus Kattengill.
You know, Wayne, everybody talking about the Dallas Cowboys' December doldrums, I think the thing to keep in mind here is that while the Saints are clearly the class of the NFC right now, they've been doing everything they can to get beat over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and I don't see them running the table. I think this is a bad spot, an interesting trap for the New Orleans Saints at home.
Hub, a couple of teams headed in opposite directions. The Green Bay Packers on a 5-game winning streak head to Pittsburgh. The Steelers now have lost 5 straight, believe it or not. We get the story from Greg Matzik.
The Green Bay Packers and Pittsburgh Steelers enter their Week 15 matchup heading in entirely different directions. What was thought at the beginning of the year to be a season-defining game for the Packers is really a game of survival for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's the Packers who are 9-4, riding an impressive 5-game winning streak, and can clinch a playoff berth with a win and a loss by the Giants or Cowboys. The Steelers, on the other hand, they've been reduced to the role of playoff spoiler after losing 5 straight games. At 6-7, they've fallen to 3rd place in the AFC East, and 3 of those losses, the Chiefs, Raiders, and Browns. In order to keep their playoff heart beating, they'll have to take down a Packers team boasting multiple offensive weapons and the NFC's top-ranked defense with a turnover margin of plus 18, Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin.
We've lacked dominance in the past and found ways to win because we've made significant plays at significant moments.
Sunday's matchup will also feature two of the best young quarterbacks in the NFL and two of the 3 most sacked quarterbacks in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers has been taken down an NFL-high 47 times, while Ben Roethlisberger has hit the turf 38 times. Couple that with the fact that each team is in the top half of the league in generating sacks, there figures to be a lot of quarterback snot flying around the cold and potentially snowy Heinz Field. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers.
There's a sense of urgency on that side, but I think we understand what we're playing for as well. You know, we're in the thick of this wild card, and and we'll have an opportunity to take a great step forward in this journey this season if we can get a win down there.
So what's the big difference between these two teams? Both have suffered injuries to defensive All-Pro players this year, but while the Steelers have crumbled following the loss of Troy Polamalu, the Packers have responded favorably without Aaron Kampman and Al Harris. The reason could be the veteran genius of defensive coordinator Dom Capers. His wealth of experience and ability to creatively adjust amid injuries has provided a residual benefit to the defense that didn't really exist a year ago. Sure, these teams may be headed in opposite directions, but cold weather December football with two of the most storied and proud franchises in the NFL playing, it's what the NFL is all about. You won't see a climate-controlled fancy pants dome in this game or a misting fan anywhere near the sideline. Pure, physical, muddy, snowy football, the name of the game. Book it. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Greg Matzik.
All right, thank you, Greg. We'll book it for sure. Analysis of more top games like Giants and Skins coming up after these messages. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We resume with our preview of the top games, Week 15 in the NFL. Up, the New York Giants take their playoff hopes to Washington, where the Redskins would like nothing better than to take the G-men down at this most crucial of times. And, you know, I tell you what, the Skins have played better of late, Hub, and this is not out of the question.
Well, the Skins have played better of late, and the Giants, after a 5-0 start, Wayne, are really struggling, you know, at 2-6. So you have to ask yourself, which is the better football team right now? It is probably still the Giants, and there's a couple of classic matchups here to watch. The Giants' passing game behind Eli Manning and Steve Smith and Akeem Nicks and Mario Manningham, third in the NFL, but the Washington defense, fourth defending the pass. You turn it around, however, and the Redskins, as challenged as they are on offense, 24th in points scored. The Giants are 28th in the league in points allowed, and they've given up 24 points or more in 7 of their last 8 games. I don't know. You go into Washington, this is a tough putt for the Giants, and really the last tough one. If they win this one, they got a chance to roll back into a wild card spot, but this is just a huge and very difficult challenge for the Giants on the road.
Hub, two teams on the fringe of the wild card race in the AFC meet in Music City as the Miami Dolphins visit the Tennessee Titans. This game is previewed by Jonathan Hutton.
There's plenty of storylines heading into Sunday's matchup between the Tennessee Titans and the Miami Dolphins. Both teams admit it. It's the biggest game of the season to this point. Almost and probably literally a playoff atmosphere and the playoffs on the line. Both teams need to win to keep their playoff hopes alive. And you want to talk about a physical game? Titans fullback Ahmad Hall says both teams better tighten their chin straps.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be about who wants it more, man, because, you know, who's going to break, you know, because it's going to come to that point where, you know, somebody's going to break and make a mistake late in the game. It's going to be a short game, you know, it's going to be a lot of running, and whoever's making that mistake at the end of the game is going to be the one that's losing it.
For the Titans, quarterback Vince Young has been on a roll since he started coming off the bye week, but he's injured. He has a mild hamstring strain that may keep him sidelined for Sunday's game. He goes into the game questionable. Kerry Collins is ready if Young can't play.
I don't know. We'll see. I want to play, definitely want to play. But in the same time, like I said, it's a day-to-day. So all I can do is treat it, you know, take care of it. I mean, the football is football, man. It's the love of the game, man. And right now, we need a couple of wins to do what we need to do. So, I mean, I'm just taking my time. I'm just going to be safe on the safe side.
For Miami, head coach Tony Sparano says they haven't had to prepare for two quarterbacks. They've prepared for only one, number 10, Vince Young.
We're expecting to see Vince. We're preparing for Vince. And if Kerry plays, then so be it. But I think at this time of year, you have to prepare for the starter to play.
And this time of the year, the month of December, Miami has had a lot of success. By virtue of the Dolphins' 14-10 win at Jacksonville last week, Miami has improved to 6-0 in games in December with Tony Sparano as head coach. To win their 7th consecutive game in December, the Dolphins will have to stop Chris Johnson, and the Titans have to go against a red-hot Ricky Williams. The defense who does the best against the run most likely comes out with the win and stays in the postseason chase. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Jonathan Hutton.
Wayne, everybody knows about Chris Johnson and how difficult he is to stop on the Tennessee Titans, but the story of this game could be two of the best-kept secrets in the NFL. Ricky Williams, averaging over 100 yards a game on the ground since he took over as the starter for the injured Ronnie Brown, and Chad Henne beginning to look like a real steal at quarterback in the middle of the second round where the Dolphins got him. They may be enough to keep the Dolphins in this game and make a wild card run.
This should be a terrific ball game, no doubt about it. Meanwhile, the San Francisco 49ers barely alive in the playoff race in the NFC. They head to Philly, where the red-hot Eagles have taken the lead in the NFC East. Our preview is authored by Donna McQuillan.
The Eagles are sitting pretty in the NFC East.
We're in a great position.
That's quarterback Donovan McNabb.
If we just take care of business and do what we have to do, we kind of secure a position and kind of get better as far as trying to win the NFC East.
His 9-4 Eagles will be hosting the 49ers. And Philly will be looking to do something they haven't done since the final five games of the 2006 season. That's earn a fifth straight win.
We got to continue to stay grounded, making sure that everybody understands that what you were able to do last week, you may not be able to do this week, and you show the defense something new that they maybe haven't seen or haven't game planned for.
During the streak, the Eagles' youth has continued to shine.
That is exciting when you can put the ball up, you know, out in front of DeSean Jackson, have him run up under it for a big touchdown, or a Jason Avant taking the middle of the field and just going up and making a miraculous catch. It's an exciting thing for me, obviously, because, you know, that's something that I haven't had in years.
The Niners, meanwhile, are a team with playoff hopes and a 6-7 record that betrays just how tough they really are. Eagles coach Andy Reid.
If you look at the scores of their games, exception of the Atlanta game, they've either won the games or they've been within a touchdown of winning the game. So they're a good football team is what I'm saying.
Reid says 49ers quarterback Alex Smith has come into his own.
He's got a real good feel for the short intermediate routes, very accurate. He's utilizing the tight end who's playing very, very well right now. The rookie wide receiver is a nice addition. So he's surrounded by people that are good football players.
He's referring to tight end Vernon Davis and wide receiver Michael Crabtree. Strong safety Quinton Michael will be focusing on Davis and running back Frank Gore.
Gore had 165 yards rushing last week. That's incredible. And, you know, Vernon Davis, he's a big-time threat at any play. So, you know, we got to do a good job trying to contain those two guys. But we'll be okay if we come out ready to go.
San Francisco is looking to avoid a sixth consecutive road loss. In Philadelphia, I'm Donna McQuillan reporting for Pro Football Weekly.
Thank you very much, Donna. Stay tuned. The Headliner plus the Handicapper's Corner are up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. Division leaders in the AFC square off in San Diego, where the AFC North Division leading Bengals meet the AFC West Division leading San Diego Chargers. The preview is detailed by Mike Costa.
If National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation movie has taught us anything, it's that electricity and cats do not mix. In San Diego, we'll see if that holds true. The Chargers are riding an 8-game winning streak with sights solely fixed on the second seed in the AFC postseason tournament. The Cincinnati Bengals also have that goal on their collective radar and need the win in Southern California just to keep pace with San Diego. Head coach Marvin Lewis says even with a loss in Minnesota last week, the Bengals are still in good shape.
It's a great opportunity for our team, for really what this is all about. So we're playing not only to win the division, but a chance to continue to be right on track to control our own destiny. So this is a good spot for us.
The magnitude of this matchup is not lost on quarterback Carson Palmer. He realizes the Chargers game could be a preview of a matchup that might materialize in the playoffs.
It's a chance to play against a big-time team that we might have a chance to play at. Hopefully here in the playoffs, maybe there in the playoffs. You know, it's a big-time game for them, and it's a big-time game for us. It's a must-win situation for both teams. And we're coming off of a bad loss that we want to rectify, and we want to get this taste out of our mouths and celebrate on their field and get back to Cincinnati.
Norv Turner has always preached to his teams to get hot in November and ramp it up in December. A big win in Dallas last week has kept the good times rolling for the blue and gold.
Our early seasons have been well covered. You know, we've had different situations that kept us from being our best. You know, we've got great leadership on our football team. They're very focused on what we need to get done. That helps you win games on a weekly basis.
Quarterback Philip Rivers is well aware of what the Bengals have done this season, especially sweeping the teams in the AFC North. He says playing Cincinnati at home is a huge plus, given what's at stake.
It'll certainly be a challenge. Positive that we get them at home, coming off two road trips. It seems like almost every game is a playoff game at this point in the year, but what's at stake for both teams is obviously out there and well known.
With a look at the Chargers-Bengals matchup in San Diego, I'm Mike Costa for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, the interesting thing about this ball game is that the Bengals are a good football team. They're going to be in the playoffs. I'm not sure they're a threat in the playoffs. Chargers really flying under the radar. They could be the ultimate threat to the Indianapolis Colts getting to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no question about it. That wouldn't be the first time those two had met in the playoffs, for sure. The Handicapper's Corner with Chuck Esposito, casino manager of the Tropicana Hotel in Las Vegas.
Chuck, you know, we've talked a lot this year about public teams and teams that seem to get a little more attention, a little more love than they should. And I'm curious about the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. I got to believe, here's a team on a five-game losing streak that I'm guessing is probably still spotting a few more points than they should or getting less than they should when they get into a key matchup like they've got with the Green Bay Packers this weekend.
They are. They're absolutely a public team hub, as we've talked about in the past. The line opened up 2.5 in favor of Pittsburgh. Early action was on the Packers, and that game went down to 1. But all the late action since then, since maybe like Tuesday, has all been on the Steelers. That number's back at 2, even though they've lost 5 straight. They're still one of the most popular teams in the league, and they're still the defending Super Bowl champs.
Chuck, the other thing I'm really curious about from your perspective and doing your job is we've now got the questions starting about what are the Colts going to do in their next 3 games? What are the New Orleans Saints going to do? Vikings will probably lock up a number 2 seed this week. Do they rest people the last couple weeks? That's got to make your job really interesting, I would think, as far as generating interest in those games and getting the number right.
Well, there's still a lot of interest because those teams are so popular and have had so much success, but you're right. As far as the number goes, there's so much volatility there. The number can move up or down based on what a coach says. I think the trend has been over the last couple of years to get away from resting all your players. You want to go into the playoffs with that swagger, playing well, but it is very difficult, and those lines tend to move up a little bit more than a normal game would, say, earlier midseason.
Chuck, thanks very much. Chuck Esposito, casino manager, race and sports for the Tropicana Las Vegas. The Publisher's Pen is next. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, I think the only thing that could make the tragic death of Bengals wide receiver Chris Henry any more sad is the fact that it comes so close to the holiday season in a time when people are looking for joyous moments in their life and looking to celebrate. And this story just about as bad as they get. Chris Henry is a young man who's a remarkable talent, had never really reached his full potential in the NFL, but had shown flashes of all-pro ability, brought down early in his career by various demons, off-the-field problems, some addiction problems, and yet seemed to have taken care of everything. It really cleaned up his act, and while he was not having his best season in the NFL production-wise, he definitely had become a productive member of the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cincinnati community. This death, just a tragic accident. It's the kind of thing you can't ask why. It happens every once in a while, and it reminds us of our place in the world and the significance of the NFL and what really matters in life. And again, you said it earlier, I'll say it again, the only thing that really matters here is, on behalf of everyone at Pro Football Weekly, our thoughts and prayers to the Bengals family and the family of Chris Henry.
Well said, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Saints, Chargers, and Redskins radio networks. The executive coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.